Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Bellstar.
And the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona, and the world at large.
We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call live at 646-915-8421. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on all social media, or email thctucson@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Tumbleweeds Health Center and Studio Scene, along with our many sponsors, for hosting our show every week. With the lowest price certifications in town, you'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things related to medical cannabis education.
Visit Tumbleweeds Health Center at 4826 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. And remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and educate.
Hey everybody, I hope y'all can hear me this time. This is not fun. I swear it happens. Every time I contact customer service, they're like, oh yeah? You think that show is bad? Watch this. Well, good morning, Grand Island. How y'all doing over there? Way, 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 way over there. What's going on this morning? How's everybody? All right. Well, welcome. Welcome, welcome to Weed Day Wednesday for the bestie. It is July 777. Woo! And 171 days until Christmas. She loves Christmas. I do not. Me and her dad used to laugh every year. We'd be like, all right, 172 days until it's over. Good time. All right, how is everybody doing out there? It's a beautiful morning. It's a beautiful morning. It's going to be hot, though, today. It's always hot here. Let's see. What is our weather going to be today? It's going to be 100 and something, I think, 105 or 106. 106! Oh, yeah, that's hot. I didn't really think it was going to be that hot. Yeah, 106. All right. So what are you all smoking out there? I got some Purple Hulk I grew that I can finally say that. Because we're allowed to now. Six plants, guys. Get some autos done in 60 days. Yeah, and they are the bomb. And always, I think there's some OG Kush in there. Yep. Got that for OG Kush. And some decaf coffee. The flavor. All right, well, we're going to listen to a little more of Doug Fine today. Woo-woo! And also, we're going to report a little bit on the news, but first we want to give a shout-out to Tumbleweeds Health Center, 4826 East Broadway Boulevard. Come on down. Get certified Monday through Saturday. Monday through Friday, 10 to 6. And Saturdays are 10 to 3, unless there's like a holiday or something going on. And then you can call in and check and all that good stuff. Check the website at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. We'd also like to give a shout-out to the Grower's House at 3635 East 34th Street. Get on down there for all your growing needs. Growershouse.com. And then also, if you go to the radio section and you scroll down, you can see our sponsors right there. We got 10 Buds and CBDBS and Kenna Health Online Digital Magazine. You don't have to go anywhere but where you are to check this out.
Canna Health is a digital magazine focused on knowledge, safe access, and advocacy with a monthly subscription readership. It's loaded with scientific and clinical articles from various healthcare professionals. profiles of cannabis clinics offering safe access to medicines, national and local organizations open to the public, and real-life patient success stories. It's free to subscribe, so don't miss another issue of Canna Health.
Yep, and you can get there right from the website. Ooh, let's go. Just click the logo there, and you get right there. Now, if you want to know what conditions qualify you for a medical cannabis card, you get on over to the certification section on tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. And the qualifications are PTSD, cancer, glaucoma, AIDS, chronic pain, nausea, seizures, all types of seizures, including epilepsy, HIV, Hep C, ALS, Crohn's disease, agitation of Alzheimer's, which we know there's 28 or 29 different types of Alzheimer's, and then, you know, part of that, dementia, so it covers a whole range in there. Cachexia or wasting syndrome, severe and persistent muscle spasms, including multiple sclerosis. That covers Parkinson's and things like that. You are eligible for a medical cannabis card if you suffer from a chronic or debilitating disease or a medical condition, or just the treatment for a chronic or debilitating disease or medical condition that causes any of the above conditions and more. So if you don't have something, I mean, if you have something that's not on the list but it's causing something on the list, then you can get your medical cannabis card.
If you suffer from one of these medical conditions and have been diagnosed by an Arizona licensed physician, medical cannabis may help relieve your symptoms. Tumbleweeds Health Center is Arizona's premier cannabis certification, health, and education center. Our primary focus is to help the patients of Arizona obtain their medical marijuana card and educate everyone about medical cannabis. With current medical records, approval is a simple process. Contact Tumbleweeds Health Center to see if you qualify for your Arizona medical marijuana card.
That's right. Give us a call, 520-838-4430. You can email thctucson at gmail.com. If you go to the website, there's ways to get contact us there. You can ask questions on a little form at the bottom of the first page there, and we will respond or just call you right up and say, what's going on in the kitchen? All right. So let's see what's happening. Oh, yeah. Speaking of 4th of July, I actually was handing out CBD treats to my neighbors. They came up, you know, I'd see them in the neighborhood and ask them if their dogs were okay or their pets were okay. And some were and some weren't. So I gave some to those that weren't. But there is a FDA warning against unregulated CBD products for dog anxiety amid the fireworks. So imagine, you know, poor thing, you go to try and relieve anxiety and you end up giving it something that causes it. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, Center for Veterinary Medicine, sounded the alarm on Thursday, pleading with pet owners to avoid using unregulated CBD products for dogs dealing with anxiety due to scary fireworks. Fireworks have long been recognized as an anxiety trigger for dogs, especially those that already have an anxiety-related condition. Dogs are typically known for their olfactory prowess. However, according to Smithsonian Magazine, dogs hear more than twice as many frequencies and sound as humans, oh my lord, providing an explanation for their behavior on the 4th of July. They can also hear sounds four times farther away than humans. To a dog, a crashing boom could sound like an explosion or some other type of calamity. Well, 4th of July can be a noisy and stressful time for dogs. The FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine tweeted Thursday, quote, ask your vet about the right way to help relieve your dog's stress through behavior modification or an FDA-approved drug for sedation or to treat noise aversion. Huh. But the FDA felt the need to call out one popular anxiety remedy by name, CBD, which is commonly used to treat anxiety in dogs and cats, often marketed as pet treats. Quote, there's a lot of talk about CBD for treating dogs who react to loud noises. You should be aware that FDA has not evaluated these products and can't say whether they are safe or effective, how they are manufactured, or whether they contain CBD, quote. Keep in mind that this is the third time the FDA has issued a similar warning ahead of July 4th celebrations, meaning that the organization just admitted that it's still hasn't done its job to evaluate CBD products for their safety even after 3 years of warning. The point, folks, one real reason to listen to the FDA is that many pet products that claim to be... Oh, sorry, folks. A bird just hit my window. Ugh. I hate that. It scared the heck out of me. A, and the poor little thing probably just... They just get stunned and they sit on the ground. Oh, my gosh. So, so one reason to listen to the FDA is that many pet products that claim to be infused with CBD contain no CBD at all. And according to the Associated Press, online grifters will sell bottles of CBD oil for well over $50 to people who fall prey to their schemes. While research is young, early data suggests that CBD could be effective for certain pet-related conditions, perhaps more in dogs than in cats. CBD-rich hemp nutraceuticals appear to be safe and healthy in adult dogs, researchers wrote in an examination of CBD safety profile for use against anxiety, seizures, cancer, and pain. In July 2018, the first clinical study to measure the efficacy of hemp-derived CBD on dogs was published in Frontiers in Veterinary Science. In this case, for dogs living with arthritis. Several more studies have explored different potential benefits. The FDA is standing in the way of progress. CBD-infused pet treats are widely available, especially after the 2018 Farm Bill was put into place. But that's not to say that the FDA tolerates them to the fullest degree. For instance, the FDA is notoriously strict about medical plants, both for humans and pets. Benefits from CBD pet treats are not yet proven in dogs nor cats. Less than a month after the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, published draft final rules to allow for the production and interstate shipment of hemp-derived CBD products throughout the country, the FDA issued warning letters to no fewer than 13 companies in 9 states for selling pet treats or food infused with CBD. Quote, the FDA is also indicating today that it cannot conclude that CBD is generally recognized as safe. GRAS, among qualified experts for its use in human or animal food, while generally recognized as safe, GRAS. For the time being, hemp-derived CBD treats marketed to both dogs and cats can be found freely across the internet, in convenience stores, and in dispensaries in multiple states. Pet owners are encouraged to designate a safe haven to keep your dogs calm during the onslaught of fireworks this holiday. Dogs can also be slowly desensitized to firework noises once they get used to hearing them repeatedly. Well, I don't know. Dogs that have anxiety and they hear, you know, 2.5 times more frequencies than humans do. Could you imagine? I think that would actually be kind of bitching. Technically what that means, that's a whole lot of frequency, but to hear 4 miles, what they say, 4 miles away, holy cow, or should I say holy dog. Are we still there? Yep, can you hear me now? Yep. All right, you can hear me now. All righty then. You guys are brain kind of getting quieter and quieter. They must be eating some brownies over there. Okay, so we'll see what else is going on in the world. We do have some guests coming up. I didn't want to have anyone on air today because I was very tired from having fun on a movie set yesterday. I was up way too early and didn't have to be. And dang, Phoenix Heat, standing out there in a full cowgirl outfit, pants, boots, vest, shirt, hat. I was a shoe shine girl. It's hot. And we just standing there. Everybody was handing us water like all day. And you just sweat it out. I mean, you could drink a whole bottle of water, but you in the next 10 minutes, you just sweat it out. So they made sure, that was very smart. They made sure to... also have electrolyte drinks on hand. Yeah, golf clap for those babies, Gatorades, and I have vitamin water, the person in charge of first aid was very, very happy. I brought this gargantuan jug of, like, I don't know, it's probably like a gallon's worth of water and ice and vitamin water mixture, because you do. And then I have a little pint thing I carry around. It looks like it's a little baby ceramic jug. It's awesome. And that's also got vitamin water in it. Yes, that's the hydrating. Thank you for checking. All right, so here's an interesting article, because people tend to compare cigarettes and, or tobacco in any form with cannabis. So here's an article that is claiming, this is from azmarijuana.com, marijuana users exposed to fewer toxins than tobacco users. Okay, people who exclusively smoke marijuana possess a reduced level of exposure to harmful toxicants and carcinogens than do those who smoke tobacco cigarettes, according to clinical data published in the journal Nicotine and Tobacco Research. Wow, there you go. A team of researchers affiliated with the University of Wisconsin and the University of Minnesota assessed differences in toxicant exposures among cannabis-only smokers, tobacco-only smokers, and subjects who routinely smoked both substances. They reported that those participants who only smoked cannabis demonstrated lower levels of toxicant exposure from most biomarkers as compared to those subjects who smoked tobacco-only and or cannabis and tobacco. Authors further reported that co-users of cannabis and tobacco did not possess greater exposure to harmful constituents as compared to those who only smoked tobacco. Authors speculated that the disparity in subjects' exposure to harmful toxins may be due in part to differences in the frequency in which the cannabis-only smokers consume the substance as compared to tobacco-only smokers. That's true. I smoke my bong, but I don't do it all day long. It's maybe a couple times a day, or even at night I just use a little pipe, so I'm not getting that big of a hit. So tobacco smokers tend to smoke like all damn day. All day long. All the live long day. Okay, the study's findings are consistent with prior research concluding that cannabis smoke and tobacco smoke are likely not equally carcinogenic, and that marijuana smoke exposure is typically not associated with the same type of deleterious effects to health as is tobacco smoke exposure, Normal noted. Moreover, the use of vaporization technology, which heats herbal cannabis to set a temperature below the point of combustion, is associated with reduced exposure to toxic gases and has been identified as, quote, safe and effective, quote, cannabis delivery device in clinical trial settings. There you go. Well, we all knew that already, but, you know, it's very, very, very difficult for people to change their ways of thinking, especially when it comes to smoking weed. You know, it's still, smoking is still that whole kind of thing, amongst, you know, people that don't smoke anyway, but still people that, like we get the more mature clients come to our health center, mature in age, let's say, because we know there's not everybody so mature out there, but they tend to like capsules and things like old school, something they can swallow and call it a day. Now we do let them know the benefit of either smoking or vaping. It's instant, like bam. And then if you use an oil tincture on the tongue, or you can suck on a candy or something, that would get into them really quickly because of all the membranes in your mouth that absorb super fast and get your system out. Anywho, let's see. Do you have any chatters out there? I asked somebody that was calling marijuana and all these things and that's pretty cancer. Oh, yeah, it's not there. See if anybody's on the air with us today. You're listening to Weeday Wednesday. All right. And thank you to Temple Weed Health Center if you want to get certified. Check us out.
Our chronic conditions holding you back from a happy, healthy life, get on the right track with Tumbleweed Health Center. Our CBD products are formulated to fit your healthy lifestyle.
I would definitely say that CBD has changed my life. I mean, I don't worry about my dog anymore, and I don't worry about sleeping anymore.
Tumbleweed Health Center, voted number one health center in Tucson, has created a proprietary number of CBD blends, each designed to promote health and well-being. Let Tumbleweed Health Center show you how CBD products might help you improve your life the natural way.
Yeah, come in and check us out. Meet our staff and our doctor. You can also come down and have a cannabis consultation if you want. You can talk. This is what most people want to talk about is the medicines that are on now. Oh, where are you guys? You're asleep. That's where you are. They want to talk about the medication that they're using and or affect the medicine to make it affect them in any certain way. So come on down, 4026 East Broadway Boulevard, and you can actually, if you want to do telemedicine, you can fill out our telemedicine form online. I will be working on making that form filling out process easier. For some reason, the software we use is not letting us update. It's not updated, and we can't download your documents. So welcome back to you guys. Grand Island. Good afternoon, I should say. You guys are great for lunch, aren't you? Yeah, it's way late over there. Still trying to decide what's for breakfast. All right. Okay, let's see what else is going on in the world. We are going to get to listen to some more of Doug Fine's book. And we're going to read, I wanted to read about this. South Dakota tribes and advocates continue to push for legal cannabis. So why aren't they getting it? South Dakota's Native American tribes not only legally opened a medical cannabis dispensary without consulting the state, but this past week, advocates also filed four different recreational legalization initiatives for consideration on the ballot later this year. The Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe was the first tribe in the nation to legalize cannabis following a memo published by the Department of Justice in 2014. Even though medical cannabis is legal in South Dakota now, as of July 1st, 2021, sales aren't expected to begin until July 1st, 2022, due to Governor not having enough time to, quote, study the issue and implement a program, quote, she said in February, according to the Association. However, this restriction didn't stop the tribe from bringing medical cannabis to its reservation. The tribe pursued this action without getting it approved by the state first, which is within their right. Quote, the grand opening of the Flandreau Sioux Tribe's Native Nations dispensary went very well, and customers have flooded the dispensaries all day, the attorney for the tribe said to Native News Online, Attorney General Seth Perman. Quote, the tribe is confident that the regulatory structure it put in place will create a safe product that will benefit customers, quote. The Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe states that under tribal law, patients must have a valid medical cannabis ID card, which will be different than the state's medical cannabis program ID card. This creates some gray areas for the members, but the governors released a press statement ensuring that tribe members would be protected. Quote, the non-resident card provision applies in this instance so long as the cardholder is an enrolled tribal member and presents an unexpired medical cannabis card issued by the resident tribe, quote, she said in a press release. Low-quality cannabis offenses should no longer be an issue of concern for those carrying 3 ounces of cannabis or less, regardless if they are a tribe member or not. South Dakota doesn't want to wait, although residents in the rest of the state will have to wait until next year for the medical cannabis program to roll out. Advocates are already hot on the heels of change with not just one, but four potential recreational cannabis-related ballot initiatives. Advocates filed the four initiatives with the Legislative Research Council and will continue to pursue pushing the bills onto the November 2021 ballots. However, there's a bit of a hiccup. at the moment with the States Amendment A initiative, which was passed by voters in November 2020 and would have legalized recreational cannabis if it wasn't shut down in court in February. It is currently being debated in the South Dakota Supreme Court on the grounds whether or not recreational cannabis should have become legal as of July 1st. February ruling decided that Amendment A would be struck down because, quote, it violated the state's requirement that constitutional amendments deal with just one subject, quote. If the Supreme Court decides not to override the February ruling for Amendment A, the advocates' most recent four initiatives will press on. Quote, if Amendment A is fully restored by the South Dakota Supreme Court, then we would not move forward with these initiatives, said Marijuana Policy Project Deputy Director and South Dakotans for Better Marijuana Laws Campaign Director Matthew Swish. Quote, if Amendment A is struck down, then we want the option of returning to the ballot next year. We are filing these initiatives now because the deadline for completing a signature drive is quickly approaching, quote. These four cannabis initiatives are similar, each addressing slightly different approaches to legalization efforts with the hopes that one of them will advance to the ballot later this year. This includes rules on possession, personal cultivation, public consumption, establishing ruling government bodies, and much more. So, all right. Well, South Dakota, there you have it. Good luck, guys. I hope you guys get to grow your own and do your own thing, because you should. I mean, come on. You know what else we should be able to do right now?
Puff, 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 puff. Puff, 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 puff,
into my house, like, what up, I got some good pot, I'm just pumped up, got some herb from the pot shop, ice in my fridge, it used to be frosty, my friend's like, damn, that's a stoned ass donkey, rolling in hella high, looking like it's FIFA time, dominating all my friends, as I eat some chili fries, draped in a Snuggie with my girl sitting next to me, probably shouldn't have had a big gulp full of ice tea, but shit, it was 99 cents. I'll be blazing and smoking. About to go and get some munchies next. Passing up on those Cracker Jacks. Reese's Pieces are where it's at. Gotta get me some soda pop. Cottonmouth has been creeping up. But can't remember where I put my keys. Yeah, that's what's up. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. No, for real. Ask your grandpa. Can I take a 65? Seville cruising to my local Publix. Nothing better than rolling with two super fly chicks. They have frozen burritos. I bought frozen burritos. I bought some Ben and Jerry's. And then I bought some Cheetos. Hello, hello, my main man Obama. A couple states have just reformed their laws on marijuana. What you gonna do, send the feds there? Hell no, the DEA's would be like, aw, they got volcanoes.
I'm gonna smoke some weed, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunting, looking for a pot shop, this is fucking awesome.
What you know about the science of marijuana? What you know about people suffering from glaucoma? They need it, they need it, it helps them with their condition. If you don't believe me, then just ask some eye physicians. Thank your granddad for voting for that guy, Richard Nixon is the president who made the plant illegal. But science is now showing that it's medicine for people, and the private sector's fighting to keep all of that illegal. Alcohol and tobacco, pharmaceutical prisons. I'll take those four major lobby groups and fight those motherfuckers. They're making money day and night, all those motherfuckers. And bribing Congress out of sight, all those motherfuckers. They'd be like, oh, it's immoral and unhealthy. I'm like, how many people are you making wealth? Anti-marijuana lobbies are making all kinds of profits, and they don't want you to stop it because of all the special interests. I call that getting swindled and pimped shit. I call that getting tricked by the government. That law's hella old, so it's time to update it, regulate it, and then get it under state control. Peak game, look into my political telescope. Think it's gonna stay like this forever? Not hella won't. Not hella won't.
Stop being a hypocrite. You used to smoke weed, fool.
I'm gonna smoke some weed. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunt, looking for a pot shop. This is fucking awesome. Let's see.
rough. It's time to hold up love. These special interest groups are nothing more than corporate thugs. Let's end the war on weed. The people have agreed. These special interest groups have kept these laws with bribery.
Welcome back. You're listening to Weed Day Wednesday, everybody. How is everybody? Almost said, how high is everybody? You don't have to be high to listen to the show. Oh, but these things are cutting out. All this technology is just like crapping out on me this morning. Yeah, I wonder what's going on. Well, I was talking to JJ, our tech guy, earlier because I miss him so much. He's passed away now, but he's always here with us. Always. Especially when he shuts our show off. So that's the play technical game. All right. Welcome back to Wednesday, Wednesday, everybody. We are going to listen to Doug Fine now. Yeah. Let me get this put on here. Hold on a moment. We love Doug. We love Doug. All right. Here we go. American Ant Farmer, Adventures and Misadventures. And, you know what it says? There's 33 minutes left. So you know what? We'll just do it. We'll just play the whole thing right now.
Following that initial letter.
There.
Since we put out that statement, this is one of the top issues I'm being asked during my visits on Capitol Hill, the FDA's outreach said 2 months later, shortly before his resignation. Many months later still, as this book goes to print, everyone's on pins and needles waiting to see just how moderate or horrible initial FDA regs are. Will it be difficult or easy for whole plant producers to provide product? You'll know the first federal regulatory scheme when you read these words. Regardless, the FDA salvo should keep us on our toes, looking those three turns ahead. That memo should bolster our confidence. The tables have turned. So recently freed from the Controlled Substances Act, our plant is now one of the fastest growing industries on the planet. Nothing has so impacted the world economy since tech came on the scene. Wear that knowledge with fortitude and pride as you lobby and educate. The Farm Bill was just the starting gun. We're defining the race. Be professional as you do your part to carve out that sweet spot between the hairnet era and our friend the fungus. It's also helpful to remember that hemp is just another crop, officially. Many people worked hard for decades to help it become recognized as such. You can shout this constantly. We're just farmers growing a plant. That's important for regulators to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Taking in this weird initial landscape, the clever craft hemp entrepreneurs are planning for initial federal regulatory frameworks, even while endeavoring to reform them as necessary to fit the regenerative mode. For her part, Janelle at Palmetto Harmony is vocally in the trenches in the effort to ensure that whatever is defined as best practices will match what is required for a thriving independent model like her company's. Even so, like the Knowles in Vermont, she's investing in compliance in advance of coming protocols. We're working with a good manufacturing practice consulting company in anticipation of FDA standards for dietary supplements, she said, walking me into one of her clean rooms. We have two rooms that are up to FDA standards. One is our extraction facility, and the other is our bottling, packaging, and R&D lab facility. For producers, patience and persistence are again keys in this early regulatory phase, just as they have been at every stage of the hemp season. I was reminded of this the other day upon learning that a third-year enterprise, an ambitious multi-state processing effort, was giving up the ghost due to lack of capital. Even when forced to drift into the policy realm, I find it's the plant kingdom reminding me to have faith in pace and dogged determination. The early season is my favorite part of the whole hemp cycle, laying down drip lines while sniffing the first apricot blossoms that have emerged overnight. I enjoy farm work so much more than the regulatory issues we've been discussing. The moment you're in the field, you hit pause on the temporal because you're connecting to the eternal. In fact, cartwheeling around my hemp fields with bees is the way I want to spend my time after material success. Mm-hmm. But given that I still have an entire bottled harvest to market, I have to think about these other things. As Margaret's Law reminds us, there is no part of the process the modern farmer entrepreneur can ignore. Just as we have a long season of farming ahead come spring, so we have an intense year of policy work to tackle. Which is to say, I've got my eye on the prize. I'm just allowing myself to play the dogged tortoise in my entrepreneurial work, which feels good from a secreting of happiness chemicals perspective. I'm cautiously optimistic about the payoff, both personally and for the wider regenerative craft industry. If we stick at it and minimize hypocrisy in our processes, I think many of us who identify ours as regenerative enterprises will thrive. We stay genuine most effectively by consciously connecting the dots in our work and our lives, even as we create our brands according to the Gospel of Dolly. The connecting the dots concept is very simple. Live your brand. Don't phone it in with half-assed greenwashing, or if you're an investor, think of it as one of your purely absentee financial ventures of the 20th century kind. Happily, regenerative farming and production and regional distribution appear to be the best routes to bottom-line success for the long term. Our business practices are our killer app. It's what we do that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Epilogue. Amen. The regenerative entrepreneur.
All right.
To be happy at home, Samuel Johnson. During my conversation with the Vermont trooper at processing time, he'd asked me what I do for a living. A lot of people wonder. Some guess Amish carpenter. Some guess grunge drummer.
Oh, good one.
Soil farmer, I said. Soy farmer? Soil. Soil building. I work for healthy yields in crops. He looked thoughtfully at my New Mexico license, then at the 50 pounds of cannabis flower in the back seat, then at the icy crust of snow he just stomped through to reach my rig. He said, "You must really care about soil." It occurred to me a few hours later as I crunched to a former Vermont girls' camp kitchen for the 13th time, just so I could process hemp by a time-consuming method, that the trooper had nailed it. That's the starting point for connecting the dots in any regenerative enterprise. No one has a problem with a promising bottom line. Hemp, globally, is going to be worth $13 billion by 2026. But it's bottom line with a mission. I'm trying to sequester carbon. We who care all care for our own reasons. We all have a dog in this fight. I have a goat. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that my family's lives have now been directly threatened by the climate situation. Over the course of the 5 weeks that the 2013 wildfire crept toward the four people and various furry creatures for whose safety I am responsible, I slowly woke to the gravity of the mission. Praying for rain in the most primeval way from his porch each morning as he watches certain destruction approach will start to awaken a fellow, especially when he can't do a thing but pack. But it's when a terrified bear sends his family hustling for safety before mauling his goats in front of his eyes that it becomes personal. I have to say I was pleased with the responses of every one of my family members to that "this is not a drill" morning. It being June in New Mexico, we had slept outside in the big family tent we set up near the hammocks between the ranch house and the goat corral. In the pre-monsoon heat, its mesh roof is a blessing, even before you add the New Mexico night sky. I fell asleep in a tranquil idyll of meteors and poo stories, and woke at dawn to galloping goat hoofs and chickens. This was not the normal start of day song. The only human awake, I unzipped my window flap and migrated over 10 seconds from "as quiet as my mind ever gets" to "red alert." A large brown mass was scaling our 8-foot goat corral fence like a ladder. Before another 20 seconds had passed, we had our game plan sketched out and executed. Sweetheart brings human kids into house, then looks for gun case key. We never found it. Self goes and makes loud primate noises such as one would make to scare off a bear. I bounded down to the horrible scene of my friends being killed, worked into a froth. I shook the corral fence, grabbed and threw a shovel over it, and generally danced around. You know how it is when you're 5 feet from a black bear screaming at him to let him know you mean business. It didn't work for about 10 minutes, which was when my sweetheart called me up to the house and suggested I drive our vegetable oil-powered F-250 over to the corral and lay on the horn. After that came a lull in the attack. We'd exiled the bear to a meadow just north of the ranch for what turned out to be 12 hours. I didn't know how much time we had, so my sweetheart and I hauled gear to the corral and tended to wounded goats, battlefront triage style. Natalie Merchant, who had given us so much milk and was my primary morning meditation partner, was hollering something awful. My sweetheart and I locked eyes and realized at that moment that our family's survival depends on mitigating climate change. We've been working on it ever since, connecting the dots in our work and lives. Your family's survival depends on tackling the climate reality too, but you probably know that. That means, sure, cultivating hemp and sister crops wildly or passionately supporting those who do. That's a major piece of the puzzle and one of the fun parts. The puzzle's instructions are figure out a way to work regenerative principles into the immediate mission-critical mindset of all industrial enterprises on the planet, while educating the mainstream customer to seek the resulting products. I don't think it's too much of a leap to plan for a broadly aware, farmer-centric buying public. Already there is widespread consumer awareness, for instance, that factory chicken eggs produced by ill-treated animals, harvested by indentured farmers and shipped thousands of miles, aren't actually cheaper than local organic eggs. Our task is to map that awareness onto hemp grown outdoors by regional family farmers. Yes, wartime mindset is required, even though the work is peaceful. And everyone needs their personal climate Pearl Harbor. It looks like it won't be necessary to drop a terrified bear into everyone's backyard to get them into the unified spirit. The constant stream of fire, flood, hurricane, and tsunami chaos may well prove a catalyst for the sufficiently seamless migration to a regenerative economy. If the agricultural philosophy and techniques we're spearheading catch on, if the carbon gets sequestered, the plastic crap replaced, the batteries renewable, we're in time. There's no way I could let up, even if I wanted to. The 2013 Silver Fire, as the Forest Service calls it, still resonates. I have to drive through its skeleton every time I leave the ranch for the wider world. For miles upon miles, entire hillsides are torched, but impressively recovering. Starting about last year, the fifth anniversary of the blaze, I began seeing a wildflower palette spread across the char. This spring, as we hike at high altitudes, we can trace the next stages of a ponderosa pine forest cycle. Mountain mahogany, three-leaf sumac, and along the creeks, alder, all doing the same thing you and I are, building soil. A forest ecosystem cycle is, like all systems that have endured for tens of millions of years, a regenerative one. Both fire and a tree's response to it were programmed into the system long before humans entered the game, thanks to lightning. The forest has been to this fire carnival before, and it normally takes 250 to 1,000 years to recover from a fire like the Silver Fire. The difference is that lately, since coal burning, humanity's systemic choices exacerbate routine cyclical events into millennial ones. In the Southwest High Desert, our once reliable monsoon season would provide 40% of our watershed's annual precipitation. Daily afternoon thunderstorms are supposed to begin in early July and peak in August. I'd say that happens every third year lately. Mm-hmm. Old-timers tell me my own ranch's creek used to run nearly year-round. Yeah. Now it runs maybe a month out of the year. It's an event when it does, as in creeks running, we'll pick up this math lesson later. September is our spring. A wildflower dreamscape rises from the arroyos and buttes. It's magnificent. You haven't lived until you've smelled a desert willow in bloom or nibbled on a lemonade berry or watched a sphinx moth get drunk on datura nectar at midnight. Now, with our seasonal arc disrupted and erratic, extended dry conditions allow bark beetles to weaken millions of the majestic, fragrant ponderosas that surround the Funky Butte Ranch. The trees, some 3 centuries old, die where they stand, leaving mountainsides of brown-needled fuses, waiting. I recognize we might be getting numb to these kind of stats, but as I type 6 years after the fire, 2019 has been the second hottest April in 139 years of record keeping, according to NASA. Carbon was measured at ho-hum 415 parts per million that month. First time in 3 million years. We're number one. Beyond the morning the bear came to breakfast, this climate change is not academic for me. It has changed life on the ranch forever. Some mornings when I stumble half-conscious to the corral for milking, the hair on the back of my neck stands while I snap into a sort of ancient watchfulness mode for a few moments, like a dog sniffing the air. We all want our families to be safe and comfortable. That's why we work. Doesn't matter if you're a farmer or a real estate attorney. The issue is whether you're looking ahead one fiscal quarter or 7 generations. Giving Dang is the secret ingredient in this industry. I'd like to petition Ms. Parton to add this postscript to her mantra. In addition to first, better, or different, you've also got to be the most unflinchingly dedicated to achieving your calling, which calling is tied into the greater regenerative mission. Or something more concise, maybe first, better, or different, plus kind. I'm setting it down here for the record, and I guess we'll see. A regenerative model is going to win in the coming economy. Folks who insist on what we wrongly today call conventional farming or wider industrial techniques, I predict, are going to be left in their own toxic dust. They won't be able to compete in productivity or quality. Humans experimented with unrestrained harvesting of our divinely given resources. We saw that it didn't work. Easy fix. At every level of society and economy, as individuals, parents, entrepreneurs, investors, dinner eaters, we're shifting into post-Pearl Harbor single-mindedness. Ninth inning, two outs. Connecting the dots starts at home because everything starts at home. Here on the ranch, we milk goats to reduce the carbon miles in our milk, yogurt, and cheese. But twice in the past dozen years, we've scaled down the herd to allow us to travel together more often. That means buying dairy again, albeit from neighbors. What can we do besides try to improve, to keep edging forward with baby steps? The journey is a life and career long one. And on the business side, too, no mortal is at the promised land unless her delivery vans run on solar-charged hemp batteries and every farmer in the operation is living the worry-free good life. Myself, I've long been engaged in a personal hypocrisy reduction project. I stand ready to be educated in the inevitable areas where I or an enterprise of mine can take it up a notch. Man, solar-powered electric commercial air travel sure will help my carbon footprint. All this consumer side stuff from righteous product labeling to not ordering company t-shirts made by Bangladeshi children is going to seem so laughably obvious in 20 years. It's a modern rite of passage. One day we all wake up and realize, wow, all my stuff was made somewhere. I wonder by whom. I wonder what's in it. Carrying that awakening to the production side, what we regenerative hemp entrepreneurs offer is such a change in our manner of interacting with the earth that simply demonstrating our principles in our products embodies a successful strategy at this stage. This is why I would love to see as many of us as possible succeed, to still be in it and living well and sequestering carbon in 7 decades and generations. That's when 30% of Americans will be making a dentist neighborhood living from independent farming. For the moment, we're still an agricultural and industrial We have 7 billion people to feed, house, and clothe. So every hemp sale is a sale for my enterprise and yours, probably for 5 more years at least, maybe 10. Collectively, we're a plane flying a banner over a crowded beach reading, "Hemp cannabis is open for business, everyone. Ask around. Know your farmer." If you worry about facing judgment for leaping in unprepared, then start small. I love it when someone tells me, "We've got a baby on the way. We just got out of debt, so we're going to start with 3 acres, but we have 20 available for next year." Just start. As Jeremy, a 25-year-old first-time Arkansan hemp farmer who helped write his state's regulations, put it when he noticed his 3-acre field was, like much of Arkansas and Oklahoma in the spring of 2019, ho-hum, under 5 feet of flooded Arkansas River, you don't see Pop Warner football players leaping directly to the NFL. So much for Plan A. That first crop might not look stellar, but I'd be willing to wager that Jeremy will still be planting hemp in 5 years. Examining the near future marketplace with a wider angle lens, a real sign of victory will be when those leading economic indicators you hear evaluated on the top of the hour NPR news updates no longer catalog new home starts or cost of the latest bailout, but rather inches of soil rebuilt and number of regenerative agriculture sector jobs created. Then, maybe, millennial events will occur once a millennium again. Lollygagging is a family practice. Representatives from the valley's honeybees and at least 4 species of native bees circled closely around us as my family and I dropped the first seeds into ranch soil at the end of May 2019. We gave a formal prayer of thanks. The dogs panted patiently under a walnut. The time-lapse camera was rolling. Planting our first home hemp crop was a very big moment for us. This is where our sons were born. But it was the sheer number and variety of bees that kept grabbing our attention. They ranged from housefly-sized to small delivery drone. We talk about saving the bees, but I didn't realize how fast it would happen. The blindingly bright leaf cutters kept tunneling their homes all around the ranch house. As folks do with turtle nests in the tropics, we set up warning signs and danced around them. And as with the turtles on a resort beach, we kind of wondered, why right here? These solitary native bees are surrounded by 2 million acres of wilderness. So there's something they like about raising a family close to us, even with wrestling dogs and goat kids and human kids. I think they might feel they are taking care of us. Maybe they have a Save the Humans campaign going. They sure work hard in our garden. We love Waro back home after a day drinking catmint, horehound, lavender, and bee balm. And any day now, hemp. We keep trying to film them digging in slow-mo. The prayer done, we started working around the field, hand planting. Almost immediately, I found myself in conversation with the local rabbit, of which the 2019 batch was stereotypically prolific. My position was basically a standing invitation to treat this crop more as an appetizer than a main course. "We're overplanting," I said evenly, my mouth pressed close to one of the 2 softball-sized warren holes that had already opened inside our half-planted field. "Just so you, the birds, the grasshoppers, can have a taste. We request that you treat this year's hemp as a sometimes food, so there's enough for everybody." This crop, if all went well, would provide a good portion of our human and goat protein for a year. 0 carbon miles, only good additives, and very few of those. I was trusting the rabbits understood the concept of pace. It was a small crop, under half an acre. I'd rather not have to go through the song and dance of circling each plant with chicken wire. It also became clear in the days leading up to planting that our hemp would be sharing soil space with the native vegetation. We were, in fact, unintentionally companion planting spectacle pod, horehound, and even, shocking as it would be to Dan Townsend, mullein. So far, it was working out fine. Seemed like there would be room for everyone as I shook seed into my loved one's palms. The effort at interspecies cooperation set me thinking for a moment about the squabbling we're starting to see in the cannabis farming community among fans of one or another of the supposedly different sides of the plant. Obviously, as we've been discussing throughout nearly all of humanity's relationship with this plant, there have been no different sides. It's always been one plant, no matter how you chose to grow it, and no matter what your intended final products. Formal THC irrelevance will make that return to equilibrium official. Communication is what's required among different styles of cultivation, old and new, and among various desired cannabinoid harvests. I mean, if rabbits can grasp this. I realized with a laugh that in my discussion with the Funky Butte Ranch Leopards, I was employing the same advice I give to farmers growing the hemp cannabis plant for any application. Follow the example of farmers throughout the ages. Call your neighbors, communicate, bring your work gloves to one another's farms, and learn about one another's techniques and kelp sourcing. I breathed deeply, exhaled, and let non-field issues escape through my muddy fingertips. It was easy to do. I got back to business. We were approaching June. Spring training was over, and the real season had begun. Records were being kept, which ate into cartwheel time. I try to allow for about an hour of bureaucratic BS per day. Each day later, the first thunder of the season, rumbling in a long diminuendo, hints at functional monsoon. Two ravens court in a graceful daredevil routine not far overhead as I and my kiddos water at dusk. I'm taking a brief break to make these notes. The family crop itself is small enough that I know the quirks of each soil area. No floater delays in this field. In my twice daily meander through the field, tucking in keikis and tweaking drip lines, I recognize every plant. We each already have our favorites. As the desert cools this evening, I report joyfully on the progress of Magu, named for an ancient wellness goddess associated with hemp across Asia. My oldest just shouted, first serrated leaf on the purple wonder twins by the currant bush. Okay. These keikis are strong, able to stand up to searing midday desert heat. They love the sun and follow it devotedly, and to ignore some rabbit nibbles. Once again, the plant is showing me that there is nothing like the strength of hemp sprouted from seed in outdoor soil. Based on their robustly dark olive green stem and rapid growth, they seem, like the bees, to feel very comfortable in their homes, which is important. The top three keys to contentment in life, the realtors correctly advise us, are location, location, and location. I'm no exception. I'm in the soil with the people I love. There's something about farming that mitigates the profound neural changes that have been brought about by our interaction with zeros and ones, or maybe even since writing. The desire to ranch and farm stayed with me through four generations of city life, suburbia, and a transatlantic steerage voyage. It is who I am at a fundamental genetic level. It's where I am healthiest. My family's life is centered on getting our fingers in the soil every day. Tomatoes, eggplant, elderberry, hemp, currant, mulberry, locust, broccoli, onion, corn, and arugula. My own fingers are browning the phone's keyboard as I type. Seems like our only hope to live this way. I can't say I'm sure of the odds, but it seems worth a try at least. Beats the pants off the alternatives. Watering and weeding the hemp field now constitute my only waking life writing breaks. This book is due in 10 days. I extend my tasks here as long as possible. I can't get enough of the sudden cicada crescendos, the complex canyon wren trills, and, of course, the miracle of germination. Yeah. I use two fingers to buttress a keiki emerging from the goat poop and the alfalfa compost we've been building. In that motion, I accidentally brush the fuzzy back of one of the wild bees, a carter, I think. They all look so similar in the insect book. and earthworm Hula the evening before disappearing back into the microbe condo. Nobody gives the impression of being disturbed. My eye is pulled to a green shimmer radiating glossier than any graffiti tag. Its nail polish name would be Neon Flux. Ah, it's a beetle shell, itself suggesting a spot where I'd start extending the radius I'm giving to this samurai plant, of which my sweetheart is particularly fond. We've named her the Hemp Yeti. She's bifurcating at the origin point of the hemp spiral we planted in this place that means everything to us. As I gently move a clump of compost in the spot suggested by the beetle shell, I find it. The white mycelia streak, a lightning bolt, a helix, a fractal. Population, 10 or 20 million, all living upper middle class mycelial lives in the highest desert landscape you've ever seen. Nurturing this fungus is something that, regardless of any entrepreneurial result, feels positive for the cosmos. For another year, the bees are here, my family eats superfood, and the soil is alive. This is a feeling all humans had until recently upon watching a crop come up. We will survive. I scan for my sons, thinking I'll call them over to see that our spring fungus gathering has paid off. They are off examining a curve-billed thrasher nest in a cholla, not even close to the hemp plants supposed to be tending. Strangely, I find that my greatest appreciation in this moment, endangered practice of lollygagging. It feels like a key part of the joyfulness woven into these past weeks in the field. Most of us rightly subscribe to the pop science belief that emptying your mind, at least for a few minutes, resets the creative side for when you head back to work. It's a neural yin-yang thing. We all do it because it works. Eugenia, she'll be delighted I'm disclosing, enjoys watching champion lip syncers. I've seen Carrie unwind by watching the Tiger Woods of snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan, run the table. YouTube has been helpful to the modern version of this concept, but the value of zoning out was well known prior to mobile network devices. I love watching my sons trip out on leaves in a breeze or whatever it is that captures them for 6 or 7 minutes at a time. When we're quiet is when we most often see a member of the fox family with whom it looks like we're going to be sharing our hemp and tomato crops this season. Plenty, plenty, plenty to go around. In the final analysis, that's what regenerative living is, the rejection of us or them, and of worry. How did the stress and the overscheduling happen? Many, of course, blame the mobile network devices themselves. Regardless of the cause, neural recharging is real. It's why I so appreciate its encoding in a day of rest. Otherwise, there's no end. It's always hemp o'clock somewhere. I've set some crazy alarm times for conference calls with Kenya and Western Australia. That's when you see moonrise and sunrise. Today is not one of those days, but more than a few recent ones have been. And if trends continue, many forthcoming ones will be too. Armed with that awareness, I find myself to end this story of a season in regenerative hemp with the invocation that while you're jamming to help humanity, including your kin, survive, you're also enjoying the ride. I hope you check yourself every couple of days to make sure you're prioritizing your family over all else and even taking the odd afternoon off to get on the lake or whatever. Because, as John Lennon says, pretty soon you're going to be dead. To my human kids who are two of this book's proofreaders, I'd like to officially say that, no, this praise of lollygagging does not mean that you can skip homeschool lessons. Unless, of course, it does. There's always a plan B. And where there is a plan B, there is hope.
All right. Well, plan B for today, I guess, to actually just get out there and do your duties. Do what you want to do. Be you, just be you. But Thank you so much for tuning in to Weed Say Wednesday, everybody. Each and every week, we love coming and bringing news and entertainment and marijuana, cannabis, weed, hemp, whatever, all of it, everything. And educate. And do it kindly. People listen better that way, I guess. See you next week. Bye, Reggae Ryan in Grand Island.